I believe that voting is heavily refracted by the money power and the media power and all of these things, but it still should not be dismissed outright as being completely meaningless. Imagine if there were no elections. Imagine if the people in power did not have to worry about their image or their policies or give certain explanations, even though the explanations are usually mendacious and misleading. That voting is still that thin sliver that keeps us on this side of dictatorship with one foot in democracy still. So I don't dismiss voting out of hand as a completely misleading and meaningless act. It's an important political act. In a way, the vote's about the only thing the poor man has. We have other things I tell people, which is agitation, resistance, demonstration, refusal to cooperate on different things, organized actions of various kinds. But the rulers of this country, the people of wealth and station and privilege, not for a moment do they treat voting as something light. They give it enormously serious attention, and they expend enormous amounts of money and expertise evidence on how to control it, contain it, manipulate it, filter it out, and make leaders unaccountable to voters. But they're always looking and focusing on voters to if only to mislead them. So, you know, the saying, you can't fool all the people all the time, but if you fool enough of them, it's good for 4 years. And that's pretty much it.
Do you think that it's fair to say that these people in positions of power, in a way, benefit from people's reluctance to participate in elections? Because I believe statistically the numbers are fairly similar to what they are in Canada and the United States. I heard something like 50% of registered voters in America don't vote, and it's becoming very quickly very close to that here also. Do these people obviously benefit from the apathy that they create?
Yes, and I think the operative phrase there, it's a good one you just used, the apathy they create. It's not just apathy. Of course, there may be some individuals in the U.S. and Canada who just I have no interest in politics, and they're just whatever, happy-go-luckies, apolitical and not interested. But most of the people who don't vote or who are described as apathetic are really often driven by a sense of futility or disillusionment or powerlessness. And if you the surveys we have show that they'll often give as a reason, they'll say, oh, I don't care. But, you know, a lot of people say, I don't care about a lot of things, and they do care, and they're just very upset and all. And apathy is often just a psychological defense against powerlessness. It's really not apathy, it's antipathy. It's anger, disillusionment, a feeling that my vote won't be effective, my voice isn't effective, that the choice I have is rather meaningless, that it doesn't matter who I vote for, my plight, my problems aren't getting any better. So what you have is low turnout among the very people who should be mobilizing to vote. Low income, marginalized people, single women. These ethnic minorities that are the target of discrimination, such the groups I've just mentioned, they're all tend toward lower voter turnout. And the affluent, well-situated, they go out and vote. They vote because, you know, they know it's wonderful to have a George Bush in power or Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor. They know it's going to mean good things for them. It's going to mean this continual battle of rolling back throughout North America and throughout the world, rolling in Europe too, rolling back all the democratic, political, economic, public service, social justice gains that were won during the 20th century, rolling it all back and getting us back to 1900, a country where there was no effective trade union movement, where public education was limited, there was no advanced education that was publicly funded, no environmental protections, no minimum wages, no child labor laws, no consumer protections. That's the kind of society that the reactionaries are gunning for, I think, in both countries. They're not conservatives. They're really reactionary. A conservative is somebody who resists liberal reforms because he wants to maintain his privileges. But these people are all for reforms. They've co-opted the word reforms to mean undoing the reforms of recent generations, undoing them and getting us back to a time when people had next to nothing. And voting I should say hijacking the electoral process is one of the ways they're doing that. The electoral process, more so in the United States and Canada, but there too, is so media driven and money driven now that anybody with a genuine reform program, genuine social democratic changes, who fights for the things we need, is going to be tuned out and relegated to not a serious candidate status. You know, we've had that. It was Dennis Kucinich and a few other people who were good candidates and saying very good things and directly opposing the money power. And they were just ordained as not serious candidates and no hope that they could win. And, of course, denied any serious coverage, and so labeled, you have a self-fulfilling prophecy here. Nobody wants to waste their vote on a loser. You want your vote to be effective in some way. And so they were often starved out.
It seems to me that there's a fundamental difference in the progressive reform movements in the past, whether it's civil rights or union activism, and what we see today. And for me, I think that difference is the absence of a popular mass movement. I mean, there are people out there fighting.
I do believe there are more people demonstrating, protesting, advocating very decent democratic things throughout North America. There are more people than we get the impression of there being, because they get so little media visibility, and so you just don't see much coverage given to them. But they're there. There are lots of people fighting against the so-called free trade agreements. There are lots of people fighting for better wage situations, better work conditions. A lot of people fighting against the cutbacks in public services and education and such. So, but these people don't get much exposure. One of the things the corporate media do is they may not manipulate. Besides manipulating our opinions, they manipulate opinion visibility, our ability even to see certain things as issues and get them to the fore. This is why so much of the voting, seems senseless, because a lot of the electoral campaigns seem senseless because a lot of the most vital issues are not discussed. Instead, what we discuss are this little issue, that little one, that, you know, and it gets into some slogan slinging and the like.
There are people on the anti-voting side who would argue that the system is fundamentally flawed and that it's, in fact, beyond reform. What would you say to people with that opinion?
Yeah, it's an ancient question in political struggle. To what extent do you involve yourself in these most imperfect institutions, rigged as they are, rigged to get certain effects? Can you involve yourself in those institutions to get different outcomes, sometimes, and you do, you know, I mean, we have elected people who have passed laws that have been, that have represented real democratic victories for us. But to what extent is it really just a charade, and what your involvement does is inadvertently add legitimacy to a system that does not deserve legitimacy? I mean, it's not an easily answered question. I do believe, though, first, you see, the fact that the system is rigged, the fact that it's money-driven, the fact that the leading parties are often deceptive and beholden to the bourgeois larger propertied interests and moneyed interests and such, all that being true, coming to those correct insights, the fact that often the campaigns are meaningless and built around puffery and around secondary or false issues, all that being true, some people then incorrectly conclude that therefore voting doesn't matter and it doesn't matter who gets elected. That's not true. There's a big difference. If we could have had the Progressive Caucus in the U.S. House of Representatives, if instead of having 70 members to it, if they had 280 members and could be passing laws, and the same in the Senate, and controlled the White House too, it would make a difference. There would be different kinds of laws. We wouldn't have the fair trade rip-offs that we have now. We wouldn't be fighting this horrible oil-driven war in Iraq and the like. There are differences, and the people in other countries feel those differences. So it does matter who gets elected, and as long as it does matter, then the question of voting cannot be dismissed out of hand as being just a legitimating charade.
I've been reading a lot lately that there, in fact, is not a big difference between a Bush government and a Kerry government. And I know that's incorrect to a certain extent, but what are your feelings about that? Like, for instance, the war, the occupation of Iraq, would undoubtedly continue under either.
It's really not clear what Kerry would do in Iraq and will do. He's got, of course, he's facing the oil powers and the like, but
he's certainly not as beholden to oil interests as your current president.
Yeah, he's not. The current president is one of the leading oil men. He and his mm-hmm. vice president, mm-hmm. and they are in bed with Halliburton and Harkin and the like, and Enron and Exxon and so forth, and Chevron. We've got to stop the reactionary momentum. If Bush gets reelected, that reactionary momentum will continue. And what he's doing, and he learned from the Newt Gingrich attempts. Newt Gingrich, for your Canadian listeners, if, just to refresh their memory, although they're so much better informed about U.S. politics than a lot of Americans are, but Newt Gingrich was the Republican Speaker of the House back a few years ago, early 90s, where he hailed a Republican revolution and started in one fell swoop to undermine all the reform laws we had, Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, this, that, the other thing. What they've learned since then is instead of knocking, trying to get everything out, what you do is you just kick out a prop here and a prop there. You weaken the structure and you weaken it. You defund a piece of it. You privatize a little piece of it. And they're doing that with our Social Security, our disability, our pension programs. They're doing it with Medicare under the guise of providing more affordable drugs. They're really just handing a lot more of it to the pharmaceutical industry. And so that process is what's going on. I think with Kerry, you wouldn't get that, or you'd get much less of that. And you'd also get an opportunity for some advances. You'd also get a better, a totally different kind of appointment to the regulatory agencies and the different other departments. What Bush and also to the judgeships in the courts. What you have in Bush is a guy who's appointing people who essentially do not believe in government. They believe in a police state. They believe in military. and they believe in order and that sort of thing. They believe in government being used to push certain sectarian interests, like outlawing safe and legal abortions and things like that. But they essentially do not believe in public services, and so we're getting really the undermining of these services, the defunding of these services. The services are defunded, and then they turn around and say, you see, public service doesn't work. You see, public transit, this doesn't work. Let's build another highway for more cars, to buy more gasoline so our oil companies can make more profits. And they do the same with hospitals and education and everything else.
And that kind of thinking is quite obviously extremely short-sighted and quite damaging.
Well, that kind of thinking is perfectly clever and diabolic. I don't think it's so short-sighted. They want to get back to a country in which a handful of multi-billionaires own just about everything, and the rest of us are living, you know, hand-to-mouth and working. And the poorer and hungrier they can make you, the more ready you'll be to line up for subsistence jobs at lower wages. The harder you will work for less and less. That's the difference between people in Canada and the U.S. as compared to people in Indonesia or Nigeria, wherever, or El Salvador. We're at a different level of historical struggle. So we don't line up for jobs at 17 cents an hour. But that's where they want to go. And they don't really care what it does to the quality of our lives or to the society or to the environment. They believe all that is there for their accumulation. We're talking about the worst addiction that has gripped any society. It's not heroin. It's not cocaine. It's wealth. It's this pursuit of more and more and more wealth. This is what they believe in. This is what they're dedicated to. This value reigns supreme over all the other values. And they don't care if they wipe out precious wetlands or precious age-old forests and such. If they can make more money, the essence of their system is to turn living nature into dead commodities and commodities into dead capital. And that's what they're there for. So it's not short-sighted. They have a long vision, and their vision is to accumulate everything. They believe whatever is left of the natural resources of this world are there for them to use as they want to use. They believe that whatever human labor and skills available are there for them to use in any way they want to, and recompense in any way they want to. And this democracy business and these elections, these are just so many things to get through, to manipulate, to finesse, to buy, in order to keep going in the direction they want to go. The democracy is really a encumbrance. It's a barrier. It's a problem for them to get to their free market corporate capitalism, to get a world which is totally run by free market corporate capitalism.
What I meant by short-sightedness was the lack of sustainability, and I guess the reason I would use an expression like that is that I do not share their greed, I suppose. But when I say short-sightedness, I mean that this is
human point of view.
It's yeah, exactly. It means that this is not sustainable, and that this system of creation of wealth seems to me that it has a shelf life, a definite life. I don't know if you'll agree, but if you agree that it's not sustainable, then
I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
But I guess we mustn't underestimate the ability of people to rationalize when their self-interest is involved. They will see you as alarmist, tree hugger, paranoid, whatever, and seeing all sorts of doomsday scenarios that you got in your head, and all there have always been people predicting the end of the world. In fact, the world's a fine place; things are better than ever. Sure, we got a few problems of pollution; we've got to get around to cleaning them up, you know. But things are fine. So they simply ignore the things that don't fit into their paradigm. And so it's, I guess they honestly believe this stuff, but there's something profoundly dishonest about it all. And I would call it diabolic rather than short-sighted. But
right, okay.
It's also short-sighted. If you want to get to your position, Ron, which is dealing with all these foolish, silly things like human life and the quality of life and the survivability of the ecology and all, then yeah, it's short-sighted. But that stuff doesn't even appear on their radar screen, you know, except as a public relations problem to finesse around with and all that.
Well, I'm assuming that when the world runs out of oil, for instance, that they'll be forced to confront some of these realities, or when they have to wear a gas mask to make it to work that day, or...
Yeah, I don't know. Their wives are getting breast cancer, too, you know. I mean, it happens, and their kids get sick. I deal with that. That is, I think they... First of all, they don't really breathe quite the air that most people do. They live up in very fancy, exclusive estates where the air is somewhat better. You know, they don't drink the same water. Ronald Reagan, who poo-pooed all those consumer battles that were fought about the toxic quality of our water and food, he drank only bottled water, and he got his meat from a special ranch where no antibiotics were used, no pesticides in the grain and all that. He got this chemical-free meat from these cattle, all the while dismissing concerns about contaminants in our meat supply and food supply, dismissing these as being silly, alarmist, unrealistic things that are going to threaten our jobs and so forth and so on. So, you know, I think they even know. They think they can get it. They can have it both ways. They can poison most of the world for quick profits, but keep their little patches all safe and comfy and clean.
There are a few people who have advocated as a solution to voter non-participation or disenfranchisement or whatever you call it, the idea of mandatory voting. I wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think a mandatory voting, if that's what it takes, if that does increase lower income turnout, that might be a plus. But there's so many other things that need to be done. We need better ballot access in the U.S. We need elections which are not so money-driven, with campaign controls. We need a limit on the time, the campaign timing. It's the better part of a year the campaign keeps going on. Presidential years, it does. We need to get rid of the laws that favor the two-party monopoly and make it very difficult for third parties to appear on the ballot. We need proportional representation instead of this single-member, winner-take-all districts, which rigged the whole system and caused a wasting of a lot of votes. With proportional representation, every vote is counted. If only 15% of the people vote for a particular party, they get at least 15% of the legislature represented, whereas now they get zero, usually, if it's a minority party. And their votes aren't even counted. And winner-take-all, the same thing. We need to get rid of the Electoral College, which has a distorting effect on the presidential elections. We Americans don't ever vote for a president. We vote for a slate of electors who are pledged to give the rigged electoral votes of that state to president. And all those small conservative states throughout the Midwest, those states are, they all have an extra two votes that's part of the whole electoral system, which represent the two senators that they have. So the conservatives have all sorts of built-in advantages here, and any serious reformers have a hard time even getting some minimal visibility because of these kinds of things. We need media that allocates large chunks of its time to all the candidates, not just to the two richest candidates who buy most of the airtime. The media really, I mean, the airwaves are the property of the people of this country. The airwaves in Canada are the property of the Canadian people. They're licensed out to these private media conglomerates that treat it as their personal property. And these are the kind of things that need to be changed to make for a more viable democracy.
It's funny that you mentioned the duration of the campaigns down there, because one common complaint up here is that there isn't enough time.
Yeah, well, you know, Canada is a very interesting mixture of American culture and European culture. And that's the way it is in Europe, too. They call an election, have it in a month. All the candidates get out there. They state the issues. There are a couple of TV debates, which they all get up there, and then they vote. And that means you don't have to raise hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, literally hundreds of millions, not just counting the two presidential candidates, but even senatorial and even congressional districts now takes almost $1 million to run an effective campaign, or half a million or whatever. You add all of that up, man, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, which gives the money power that much more leverage here. So I would say no. I would say 30 days is enough. And at least it's usually only that last month or two that, as election time comes, even here in the States, that attention heightens, you know, and people start to focus more and more on how they're going to vote or what's being said and all that sort of thing. So I think what you got is a much better situation.